Ramsey TV.
Did you ever have one of those times where you go to bed, right, and you're all cozy in your bed, and you're just snuggling up, hoping to enter into the delicious world of unconsciousness, and then you have this great thought, and it's like, oh, wow, that's a great thought. Maybe I should write that down. But you don't. The last thing you want to do, you don't want to get out of bed, drag your carcass into the kitchen, make a note. You just think to yourself, I'll remember it. I'll remember this. But then you tell yourself how many times you were in a similar situation and you forgot. Well, that's what happened to me last night. But fortunately, ladies and gentlemen, being the kind of person I am, and owing you the fruit of my thoughts, I got up out of bed and I wrote it down. And it concerns the law of Moses. So this morning, I am going to give you a basic teaching on the law of Moses. I mean, I never like to lose the aerial viewpoint. I never want to get so lost in the details that people look around wondering, where the hell are we? What are we talking about? Okay, this is A, B, C, D, E, F, G. A, B, C, D, E, F. Nope, only A through F. Points, my points of what you need to know about the law of Moses. First of all, why did the law of Moses come? Oh, this is Martin Zender. Thanks for being here. I'm the host of MZTV. The MZ stands for Martin Zender. That's why I can talk about anything I want on my show. It's a wonderful license. It's just so freeing and so liberating, and you like it most of the time. Here's what I wrote down when I got out of bed. God did not start with the law of Moses and work up. He started with grace and worked down. Are you getting that? It's the same deal in the Garden of Eden. We think that the first sin among the human race was the occasion for God to come up with a plan in order to fix it. And then we ended up seeing, because of the sin, God's grace, God's love, his compassion. Jesus Christ shows how much God loves the world by forgiving his enemies from the cross. It's like, wow, we really didn't know what the love of God was until we heard Jesus Christ say that from there. Well, that's, see, no. It's not linear as we consider it. It's that God always had this love and grace in his heart. He started with that. And then in order to manifest it, he had to introduce sin and evil and death into the world in order for people to appreciate what he always was. So it's not that the sin in the garden was the occasion for the manifestation of Christ. It's that Christ was the Lamb foreknown before the disruption of the world. Before sin, the Lamb was already there in God's mind. That is, the cure was there before the disease. God invented the disease to display the cure. That's it. Okay, I finally said it. What did I say? Oh yeah. God invented the disease in order to display the cure. The cure came before the disease, if you can wrap your head around that. Likewise here, God could not, it's like God wanted to start with grace. Let's put it that way. I'm speaking as a man, because I am a man. God wanted to start with grace, wanted to start with the whole Paul's gospel. Paul's gospel should be the only gospel, should be. Okay, there you go, Alan. I'm throwing you on there. Should be. But no one would appreciate it if God came out of the gate with Paul's gospel. Hey, guess what? I love everybody. Everything's cool. People would say, yeah, so what's the big deal? Oh, so we needed law first. But the law didn't come to everyone. No, it only came to Israel. Israel was what I call, I've never heard anybody else call Israel this. I've called Israel this for years. The guinea pig nation. Not that God was experimenting, but that God needed a people to carry the burden of that law to demonstrate to the rest of the world that by works of law, no flesh at all shall be justified. Israel was the chosen vessel for that. So God starts this long, drawn-out affair just to make a point. And the point is that by works of law, no flesh at all shall be justified. Nobody would know that unless we had works of law. So God instituted the law of Moses. Oh, I got to do this. I got to do this. They're going to see why. Thousands of years later, they're going to see why. God's very patient, by the way. And we think, oh, Israel was so lucky to get the law of God. Lucky? Hell no. Hell no. They lost the lottery, my friends. Israel lost the lottery. I'm going to form a nation, God says. See, I can't do this. This is the true God. God says, I'm going to form a nation, a tiny little nation, and I'm going to give them this law. Why? Because you love them? Well, he does love them, but they're going to be a demonstration nation, a guinea pig nation. Thank God that the law didn't come to us. They carried this burden for years. And Paul ends up saying, you know, the law came so that the offenses would increase. Romans 5:20. Israel didn't get that notification. They weren't meant to. They had to strive and struggle in ignorance of what the true purpose of the law was. In order to be a good demonstration, Israel had to feel it. She had to actually go through it. It could not be theoretical. So keep in mind, God started with grace and love in his head way before the disruption of the world. And he says to himself, how do I demonstrate these great things? Well, I can't demonstrate a beautiful snowflake unless it's against a black backdrop. So I need to create the black backdrop of human failure. And I need to let everybody know how perfect I am. And the law is perfect. Paul says that in Romans 7. Nobody's saying the law isn't perfect. It's perfect. It's just that human beings can't do it by design. That little secret was hidden from Israel because they had to struggle in real time against it so that we could look at it and say, okay, that's not the route for success. And yet we still have Christians today saying the law. Yes, that's the route to success. It's like, duh. There's no bigger duh in the entire world. They have no excuse because it's all written down. The law came so that the offenses should increase, law escort to Christ, all those things. I'm going to get to that verse if I have time. So they had all, the Christians have all these verses, but they still tack up the Ten Commandments on their wall, point to it, and tell their congregation, do that or else, do that or else. They're living in the Stone Age. They're a bunch of Flintstones, as I said before. Oh, by the way, one of my faithful subscribers gave me this. It was Elaine, in fact, gave me this years ago, this mug that I'm drinking out of. So I won't repeat it on the air. You can read it. Okay, and secondarily, I'm going to get to this. Don't worry, God's, yes, I know. People are thinking, well, that's really mean to do to Israel. It's really actually mean what God did to Israel. In a way, you can look at it as, well, what an honor that God chose that nation to reveal himself. That's true. What an honor that God used Israelites to record the word of God. No one but an Israelite wrote the word of God. That's also true. So there is, you know, God gave them the divine ceremony. And so, yeah, that's true. I can see that in a sense. But in the larger sense, I'm thinking Israel lost the lottery. They drew the short straw, and now they're burdened. They've been burdened with this thing, not seeing the truth yet, because blindness is still on the eyes of Israel, till the fullness of the nations may come in. Romans 11, with the exception of the remnant. There is a consistent remnant throughout the era of faithful Israelites who are holding fast to the promises, even though they don't have a temple, even though they can't fulfill the law. Now they're a people in waiting. What are they waiting for? The return of Christ to put the law in their hearts. See, a true Israelite understands this. Can't do the law anymore. Even if I wanted to, I don't have a temple. A true Israelite will understand this and that they're waiting for the return of Christ who will fulfill the prophecy I mentioned yesterday, the one that Alan apparently forgot about, Jeremiah 31:31-34. I'll write my law on their hearts, on their minds, on their comprehensions, and they will do the law. How do you know? Because I'm going to make them do it, basically. Do I have to say it this bluntly? Says God. Yeah, he does. So, as I told you before, the law came through messengers, through the hand of a mediator. quoted that to you earlier out of Galatians. Yep, Galatians 3:19. What then is the law? This is one of my notes. I'm gonna get to it now, apparently. What then is the law? On behalf of transgressions, it was added. Oh, I got something to say on that. On behalf of transgressions was it added until the seed should come to whom he has promised, being prescribed through messengers in the hand of a mediator. Speaking of the law. So God's heart wasn't in it. He said, I got to do this. Got to do this to make a point. It's a long way around. Long way around the mountain to make a point, God. But hey, that's why he's got it. I'm not. I would have come right out with grace. But see, no one would have appreciated it. Grace, yeah. Grace. Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. So, God's kind to us. We have access to God, yeah. So, ho! But you don't think that way after you see how high and mighty and powerful and perfect God is. Through the thunder, the lightning, the fireworks, the pyrotechnics on Mount Sinai, and the failure of the people to do it. That was absolutely necessary. And it came so that God could eventually unburden his true heart with grace with the Apostle Paul. That was his true heart. That's what he was wanting to do the whole time. This is why he said, I don't delight in the blood of bulls and goats, or gulls and boats, whatever you like. Don't delight in it. It's not my heart. Had to do it. I wasn't intimate with it. You know, I prescribed it through messengers, like, you take it down there, you take it down there, give it to Moses. Oh, it's got a bunch of in-betweens, bunch of go-betweens, bunch of agents, you know, priesthood nation and all that. And this is the law of Moses. However, I'm going to get to this point. Don't know if I'm going to do it today. This might be a two-parter. This is the law of Moses under what's called the Old Covenant. Yes, the Old Covenant. A covenant. Some in some versions, like the King James, they say Old Testament. But it's the same thing. A testament, a covenant, the same thing. There's an Old Covenant. This all has to do with the law. The law doesn't change. There's an Old Covenant, and there's a New Covenant. Simply said, the Old Covenant is when God, relatively speaking, sits back and says, okay, go at it. Fulfill it. Go ahead. And Israel said they would. At the foot of Mount Sinai, you know what they said? All that the Lord has said, we will do. Perfect. That's what he wanted them to say. They had to be convinced they could do it. They announced to the world that they would do it. And they failed by design. The New Covenant takes that same law. This is that what I was talking about yesterday with the book of Hebrews and the transference. The law would be transferred. Hebrews chapter 7. Same law. It's like taking a beating heart out of a dead body, and the same heart still beating, and you put it into a new body, and now it's going to function. This was the law, the Old Covenant versus the New Covenant. God takes the law out of a dead Israel who can't do anything, though she try like crazy, takes that pulsating organ, the live, blood-filled, beautiful thing. It is. It's a beautiful thing. It's God's thing. The law is true. Paul says, we're not saying that the law is not perfect. It is. Paul says, I just can't do it because of sin operating in me, right? Sin gets an incentive through the precept, and it causes in me every single thing that the law told me not to do. Read Romans chapter 7, all of it. You'll find that. Takes this pulsating law, it puts it in a new body, now a body that can use it. That's the New Covenant, when God himself writes the law on their hearts. He basically finally just forces them to do it. And it happens during the millennium. So God has to fulfill it. These people, including Alan Hess and other people called preterists, who say that, well, God's done with the law. Oh my gosh, just one, if we just only had one verse where God says in prophecy that he will fulfill his promises to Israel to make them the head of all the nations. The law will go forth from Zion. As I said, all the nations shall stream to Jerusalem. 10 men of the nations will take hold of the hem of a Jew and say, take us to Zion, show us your God. All these things, you know, the lion will lie down with the wolf, or the wolf, it's not a lion. Somebody told me that. I keep saying lion and lamb. Martin, it doesn't say lion, it's a wolf. Get your shit together, Martin said. found out they're right. It is a wolf. It doesn't say lion. It's one of these weird things that gets into your head. It's a wolf and the lamb will lie down together. Has that ever happened? No. I went to the zoo last summer. No. They still got the wolves in a cage and the sheep. Well, I never seen a sheep at a zoo. You know what I mean? Or a lamb. Yeah. Anyway. Paul says that the law was our escort to Christ. Now, he's writing to the nations when he says this in Galatians. So he's not intimating that the Galatians actually at any time had to do the law. When he says our, he's speaking of himself as an Israelite. And it was an escort. That's what I mean. It was a temporary thing to show how high and mighty God is, so that when Paul comes along and he finally says we have access with confidence to the Father, your mind's blown. Because you know how difficult access was to the Father back in the days of the Old Covenant. That's in 3:24. So that the law, Galatians 3:24, the law has become our escort to Christ that we may be justified by faith. The whole purpose of the law, again, was to be a backdrop against which human failure can be measured, bringing people ideally in desperation, like, well, we can't do this thing, help us, what are we going to do, rescue us, we can't do the law, our flesh is unable. Oh, guess what, I got a quote-unquote remedy for you, and it's grace. But that doesn't mean that all the Israelites jump ship into Paul's gospel of grace, because as I said, God, having made all these promises, is going to fulfill them. And so he keeps certain of the Israelites in the sphere of law, but makes them hope for a new covenant. Wait for it, he says. Wait for it. That's what the book of Hebrews is all about. Wait for it. Wait for it. And that will eventually be fulfilled. God's going to give them 1,000 years. It's almost like, I hate to say this. Actually, I don't. I like saying it. It's almost like throwing Israel a bone. It's like, you use us for a guinea pig nation. Throw us a bone here. God says, okay, I'll give you 1,000 years. To glory in this thing where you're actually going to do it, and all your mistakes will be made up for, and we're going to give you 1,000 years where you are the head of all the nations and not the tail. Yeah, all right, we'll take that. But it's a short period of time in the Aeonian times. 1,000 years is nothing in the Aeonian time scheme of things. But God's throwing Israel a bone. Here's your 1,000 years, okay? Enjoy it, because after that's over, I'm getting rid of that, I'm getting rid of the thing that I brought to backdrop my grace, which I had in my heart all along. That's the escort. It's an escort in a way that it sets the stage for it. I think you understand that. And then Galatians 3:19, what then is the law on behalf of transgressions? You know what I think of that? People say, well, yeah, it's on behalf of transgressions, meaning that the law came so that the transgressions would stop. But we know from Romans 5:20, law came so that the transgressions would increase. So on behalf of transgressions was it added. Because the law wasn't there in the Garden of Eden. It was added in the time frame reference in a linear sense. It was added on behalf of transgressions. Tell you what we're going to do, transgressions. Because we need you to be in the world, because we need that backdrop of sin in order to reveal a Savior, we're going to bring the law on behalf of transgression. In other words, to increase transgressions. Don't look at me funny. I know you're not, but somebody over your shoulder might be. Who are you listening to? Who's this guy in his kitchen saying that the law being added on behalf of transgressions was in order to produce more transgressions? Are you kidding me? Okay, well, I'm going to have to go to Romans 5:20. I won't go to it. Read it on your own. I'll put it down here. The law came so that the offense, I think it says in the Concordant version, would increase, not decrease. Thought that was a misprint first time I saw it. No. So on behalf of the transgressions, was it added? Because the law increased transgressions because, as Paul says in Romans 7, sin gets an incentive through the precept, i.e. through the law, and it produces the very thing that the law ostensibly exists to curb. It's not meant to. Looking at the big picture here, looking at the absolute viewpoint. So the transference, again, like I said yesterday, I love that. I'm going to end with this in Hebrews chapter 7. If indeed then, verse 11, Hebrews 7, that perfection were through the Levitical priesthood, for the people having placed under law with it. There's a priesthood that goes with the law. The priesthood is the administrators of the law. What need is there still for a different priest to arise according to the order of Melchizedek and not said to be according to the law of Aaron? Here's the money verse, 7:12 Hebrews. For the priesthood being transferred, that is, we're taking it from the sons of Aaron to the sons of the spiritual sons, I would have to say the metaphoric sons of Melchizedek. We're taking it from the tribe of Levi to Melchizedek. While we're doing that, because we need to allow for Jesus Christ to be a priest. He couldn't be a priest under the old order because he was out of Judah. Nobody from Judah was ever a priest. They were all from the tribe of Levi, the name of one of the sons of Israel. Judah was the name of one of the sons, one of the 12 sons of Israel. Levi was the name of one of the sons of Israel. For some reason, only the Levites could be the priests, the go-betweens, the guys who were supported by all the other Israelites in order to take care of the divine service. But now, we're being told here, I'm not going to go into Melchizedek, obviously, it's not in my purview here this morning, but if you transfer the priesthood, you transfer the law also. Verse 12, for the priesthood being transferred, that is that beating heart, well, actually, I spoke that way of the law, the priesthood being transferred, of necessity, there's coming to be a transference of law also. So there you go. The priesthood is like the carrier of the law. So the priesthood is going to switch from a failing one. The high priest dies every year, has to be replaced, a failing priesthood, to an indissoluble priesthood, to a priesthood that lasts for the eon. And that priesthood is called the Melchizedek priesthood, and its chief priest is Jesus Christ. And he doesn't die. He just keeps going like the ever-ready bunny of priests. Under the new covenant and the law also, that beating heart, that beautiful beating heart, is transferred from the dead body, from the Levitical priesthood, from the Aaron priesthood, into the Melchizedek priesthood. And now Jesus Christ infuses that priesthood and infuses the priests thereof. That is, the resurrected Israelites, infuses them with his spirit, and they can't help but do the law. And there, ladies and gentlemen, is a basic teaching on the law of Moses. If you like this, send it to your friends. As long as you're not offended by my coffee mug.